2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Time to take KSL Outdoors. This is Utah's most listened to program about hunting, fishing, camping, and high adventure. All the gear you need to buy, where the fish are biting, and secret places in Utah and around the world where you can have a blast. KSL Outdoors with host Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
I guess our listeners are getting used to this by now as we start a segment and a second hour of KSL Outdoors Radio. Anytime you hear George Michael, I don't think he even gets airplay on any music stations anymore. But we're helping to sell old records here because Faith Jolly is set to join us from the Division of Wildlife Resources. But first, let me bring back in Russ Smith from Sky Call Satellite. Good morning, sir.
Yeah, good morning again, everybody.
And hello to Mr. Navidomskis, who is joining us back in K-Town, I think.
Yep, good morning.
You did come back from the mountain and decided to stay this time.
Well, you know, it's too hot. I need air conditioning in the afternoons.
Yeah, and no power up in the canyon, I guess, to keep the air conditioner going.
No. I have a solar panel, that's it.
Oh. All right, nice to have Faith Jolly back with us. Faith, good morning.
Good morning, and I have to tell you that I feel so honored every time you play my little theme song. It's so great.
Well, it started out as a spoof, but it's become part of the thing around here.
And it's the thing.
Anytime we can add production value to this show, I try and do it because it's a mess otherwise.
Guess what song we're going to do around Christmas for you?
Oh, no. Holly Jolly Christmas?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's usually the other joke that I get. Yep. I have a weird name. It's to be expected, so it's fine.
Poor Faith has lived with this her entire life, and now we just continue to drive it home. We wanted to get together today to talk about some of the proposals for bobcat and cougar hunting, some recommendations anyway that folks will have a chance to have input on for the 20 and 21 season. I'm always curious, and I think I probably ask this question every time we get into this topic, but how many people actually hunt bobcats and cougars in the state? Do we know?
So I don't know the exact number off the top of my head. It is kind of more of a niche group. Definitely not as popular as our deer and elk and, you know, obviously. There's quite a few, and it's, you know, the bobcats, it's more of the kind of fur trader group, you know, the trappers. It's one of those species that you can trap legally in Utah. So, yeah, again, it is kind of a smaller group, kind of a niche group, but there's definitely interest here in Utah.
Well, particularly if you're in the livestock business, right?
Yes. Yep. There's a lot of passionate people when it's, you know, comes to kind of how we regulate cougars here in the state, because they can often impact, exactly like you said, some of their livestock herds as well.
And Navi, we've talked about this before. People probably have been in or around cougars and would never know it. Becky actually got the scare, I won't say of her life. The scare of her life was actually waking up next to me the first time after we got married. But she's always been a bike rider, a mountain biker, and she has ridden this particular trail on many occasions, never thought twice about it, and come to find out there was a fairly good-sized cougar that was living in that canyon, and she probably rode past it every day and never thought twice.
Yeah.
Did she ever see it?
What's that, Navi?
Did she ever see it?
Oh, yeah. Just the tail end, which she was happy to see. She didn't want to see the other side coming her way.
The front, yeah. They are pretty stealthy, and, yeah, you usually won't see them because they're mostly active, kind of dusk, dawn, and, you know, throughout the night. But there seems like there's been, I mean, we're getting more reported sightings because everybody has cameras, you know, those doorbell cameras now. And so that's when most people will see them, is they'll see the footage later and realize that a cougar was walking through their front yard following some deer. So it is kind of interesting. Yeah, they're definitely out there. We just don't always see them.
Yeah, and the population seems to be growing, although the division does what it can to, you know, maintain a certain standard or a certain goal with the management of cougars and bobcats in the state of Utah. I saw a quote from your mammals coordinator, Darren DeBlois, who says, our goal is to maintain a healthy cougar population within the current distribution of the species across Utah, while also considering human and livestock safety and declines in population of big game species that cougars prey on. I mean, that's a pretty broad goal there.
It is, you know, and I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, they're definitely, we always get a little bit of opposition to cougar hunting in the state. But yeah, really that's, you know, our goal is to make sure we still do maintain a healthy population. Hunting is just one kind of management tool that we use, and we follow guidelines that are established in our management plan. And we get feedback from non-hunters, from these livestock producers, kind of like you mentioned, you know, that maybe impacted by cougar loss. And then, yeah, we're a big thing right now is we've been actually legislatively mandated to help manage cougars in a way that if they are impacting some of our big game species as well, like deer and elk, that, you know, we're trying to kind of manage them in some of those areas where those populations are declining too. So there's definitely a lot of factors into how and why we kind of set the permit regulations the way that we do.
Yeah. And keeping track of breeding females and healthy cougars in the population, all of those things. What are some of the changes then that are being proposed right now?
Yeah. So first I'll kind of mention, and I kind of touched on it, there were a few laws that were passed just this past legislative session, 2020. One is, like I mentioned, that we've kind of been directed to take immediate action when certain conditions are met to make sure that we're managing cougars so that they're not negatively impacting some of our big game herds. That, you know, if there's an area where some have been documented where their populations are declining for deer, for elk, then we have been asked to kind of take action to allow more harvest and removal of cougars in that area. So that's one thing that, you know, it'll be taking effect this fall. It's kind of already gone into effect because that law was passed. And then there's, you know, another law that's, you know, as part of that, we're going to also be implementing this year a new spot and stock hunting season for cougars. And that'll run from August to December 31st, so just later this year. And it'll be implemented on a year-by-year basis as needed, you know, to help kind of decrease these cougar populations in some areas where, you know, maybe the deer populations are declining. So those are two new things that are already going to be in place because of those new laws that have been passed. So we're just kind of letting people know about those up front. But yeah, there's a couple other changes that we are proposing. And just like every year, you know, we make these recommendations for all the different wildlife species that we manage hunting for. And we let the public give feedback on these. So these ones are proposals we're making that we do want feedback on. One is just, you know, we're recommending for our regular hunts that aren't in some of these predator management units. We're recommending just a slight increase, an additional 27 permits in some of these hunting units. And then we're also increasing the harvest limit from 1 to 2 cougars for a lot of the state. And that'll start July 1st. And we're proposing it to run almost till next July 1st, till June 30th. So yeah, there's just a couple proposals that we're recommending. And like I said, we always want to get some public feedback on these proposals, because we know there's a lot of different, you know, interest groups and things that have some different ideas on some of these proposals.
Yeah, 27 doesn't sound like a lot as far as an increase go, but I don't know what a litter size is for female, mature, healthy cougars, but you could probably grow that population in a big hurry.
Yeah, and part of that is, you know, like I said, the legislative changes, we are allowing more harvest there as well to kind of help with some of these declining deer. So that one, a lot of those are going to be, you know, quotas set in a hunt. So that will also, you know, that part of the legislative changes, there will also be an increase probably in harvest. But again, you know, it is really difficult to hunt cougars.
Yeah.
So we want to remind people, you know, not everybody that gets a permit is going to harvest a cougar.
Do they do it with dogs, by the way? Do they have dogs help on these hunts?
Yep. So we do allow dogs on most of the hunts. The one thing with that new fall spot and stock hunt, we will not allow dogs.
Okay.
But generally, you can use a dog on most of these hunts because, yeah, that helps a lot, obviously, because they're elusive and they're hard to find. So yeah, it is quite difficult to hunt. So we do tell people that maybe see some of these changes and that we're allowing more harvest. They kind of panic thinking we're going to decimate the cougar populations. But really, it is very difficult to hunt cougars. And we do make sure we're setting these quotas in these areas so it'll still maintain that healthy population.
Yeah, I know Darren wanted to make sure we made the point, too, that it still would be illegal to harvest a cougar if it has a GPS tracking collar on it. So you need to be careful about that, too.
Yep. Yeah. That's another proposal that we're kind of looking into. It doesn't sound like we're, you know, it's currently not illegal. We definitely always kind of recommend that people don't harvest collared animals just because it's really expensive. It's time intensive for us to put those collars on them. And they're all kind of part of a statewide study for migration that we do. So, you know, it's not illegal, but we're actually looking at, that's one of the proposals, is maybe clarifying when it would be illegal to harvest a cougar with a tracking collar.
We're almost out of time, but and I knew we'd take up most of our time talking about cougars, but when it comes to bobcats, I didn't realize the number of permits was so high. It's like almost 6,500.
Yeah. And with this year, we're actually, some of the proposals that we're changing, the number of permits will stay the same, but we are proposing to reduce the number of permits that each individual trapper can have just slightly. So we'll reduce that from 5 to 4 permits. And because the permit, the management plan basically gives us 3 criteria for, you know, maintaining a healthy population, and 2 of those 3 parameters have indicated that we do have a declining bobcat population. So another proposal that we are recommending is to shorten the bobcat trapping season this year as well.
All right.
So just to try and maintain that healthy population here in the state.
All right. And if people want information about the RAC meeting sites and times, it's all going to be online, I'm going to guess. They can get those by going to wildlife.utah.gov.
Yep, exactly. It's all on our website. All those meetings are going to be virtual, obviously, because of COVID. So they can watch the presentations, read up on the proposals, and then they can actually give feedback online just through a comment form. And then they can watch those live RAC and Wildlife Board meetings online as well.
This may be a glitch on your website I was going to make you aware of. I tried to log on this morning. Matter of fact, I'm on it right now at wildlife.utah.gov. It automatically took me to the elk permit page, and when I click on it, it says I'm the 406,978th person in line.
Yep, you have stumbled upon one of our issues going on this morning. Yep, there's been a really, really high, just unprecedented demand for these remaining permits and over-the-counter permits that we're selling today.
Holy
because
cow.
We're only doing it online this year.
Yeah.
It opened up this morning at 8.
Yeah.
And so because it's only online, it's just been insane. And we have had some issues, so we're working through those. We do apologize to anyone that's had any issues trying to buy a permit this morning, because it's definitely caused some glitches and some issues with our sales system.
Yeah.
For sure.
I was just trying to get on to some of the other features on the website. I can't even get past this, but
it's pretty much the only thing that's up right now, because our website can't handle the amount of traffic.
Yeah. Faith, we got to run. Thanks, as always, for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right, another break. We'll come back, and we'll check back in with Mark Wade. Head back out on our one-tank trip of the week next.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up in just a minute in the space where we usually would be doing our snow day segment in the winter months, we're going to head back up to Snowbird appropriately and check in with Brian Brown about some of their summer activities, but also talk about some deals that if you're going to take advantage of for next ski season, and they've got some doozies right now with savings on ski passes, you need to take action on it by the end of the month. But we'll save that conversation for Brian coming up in a minute. We want to revisit our One Tank Trip of the Week. Mark Wade is back with us from road tripping with Bob and Mark, not Barb and Mark, as I said earlier. Just in case. Yeah, you need to make sure Bob hears that because he'll appreciate that. Where did we? Yeah, I know you will. Where did we leave off last time? I think we were headed to some of the state parks down there in Escalante.
Yeah, in fact, We talked about how there's three state parks in the vicinity, mm-hmm. and one of them right there in Escalante is the Petrified Forest State Park, and there's some huge petrified trees and logs and things that you can see there, and it's all on the ridge just above Wide Hollow Reservoir, and you can go there and play in the reservoir and paddleboard and kayak and do your activities there. So there's camping there. It's a great little state park.
I wonder, has that been added since, Russ, has that been added since we did our trip?
No, actually, when we did our trip, they were just finishing up the total remodel of that park, and they enlarged the lake, and it's just so much nicer than it ever was before.
Okay. I don't remember stopping there, but that's not a surprise because we were driving.
We did. The mayor of Escalante was there.
Ah, now I remember.
Yeah.
Okay.
All the local dignitaries came out.
It's not often that the mayor greeted us at any
of
these. No,
that was the only place.
Yeah. Kodachrome is one of the more or better known spots, Mark, I guess. Kodachrome Basin there.
It is, it rates as one of my favorite little places to go because it's, I think it's magical. It's a magical little hangout. This is a place where millions of years ago, they say, there were geysers shooting up out of the ground. Mm-hmm. And then what happened is the geysers stopped and sediment came in and filled those geyser holes with sediment. And then that sediment solidified. And then all of the ground around the geyser, solidified geysers, eroded away, leaving these towers of stone, these big towers of stone. They're geysers. They were former geyser holes. Interesting.
And then
we got pictures.
We do, and I was hoping you wouldn't bring that up, Russ, because if those pictures get out, you could be arrested. But I
might lose my job here. Yeah,
I'll just leave it at that. Anasazi State Park, we talked about. There's so much more than you might expect if you go there, but the Indian ruins and some of the things that are still there are really fascinating to see. If you have any interest at all in Native American history, it's fantastic.
It is, and you've got actual pit houses that you can see down into that are just the way they were 1,000 years ago, and of course lots of artifacts inside the museum to see.
Before we totally run out of time, I want to make sure that we get a list of some of your featured businesses down there, because obviously when people plan their One Tank Trip of the Week, which again, I've been keeping an eye on the cost of fuel these days, and for me it's diesel. Under $2 a gallon. It was $1.99 at a couple of stops. I don't know that it's been that way in my adult life, but there's some fantastic opportunities to just get on the road and spend some time with your family. Tell us where to stay and where to eat.
So the best place we're going to talk about today for lodging is the Slot Canyons Inn Bed and Breakfast. And they have 8 rooms inside their bed and breakfast. And it's this Anasazi-style structure. And then they have a cabin that was once owned by the lady who was Miss Kitty in Gunsmoke for our mature followers of the old show Gunsmoke. She owned this cabin. Now you can stay in it. And then they have a couple little houses there that are tiny houses. And there's just a great place to hang out. They have their own property about 5 miles out of town, 120 acres. And Brigham Young University came in and found that there were Native Americans living there for the last 10,000 years. And there's a dig with petroglyphs that you can tour right behind the cabins.
Huh. And that's right outside of Escalante?
About 5 miles just outside to the west.
If you want a website, Slot Canyon Inn, or Canyons, I guess that's plural, slotcanyonsinn.com. That sounds fantastic. And then adventures, I guess there's places down there to get rentals if you don't have the toys, correct?
If you don't have them, or if you want a guided experience of some kind, a lot of times you get into these outdoor areas, and it's better to have a guide, frankly, because the guides can tell you all about what you're experiencing, and they take you to the right places at the right time. You don't have a bad experience because you're with somebody who knows what to do. And so High Adventure Rentals and Tours in Escalante does Jeep and UTV rentals and tours, and they even do hiking tours. And then the Escalante Outfitters also there in town. They have some great food at their place, and they'll do other guided tours. One of the things that they do is fishing, which you were talking about earlier, and they'll take you up on the Boulder Mountain and take you up fly fishing or fishing up on the lakes.
Well,
I was going to say, and they have some dang good pizza there.
Yes, they do.
You also threw in the BLM Grand Staircase Visitor Center, and I'll just leave it at that because we're almost out of time. But you listed as some of your favorite views down here on our one tank trip. Just list a couple of those for people to look forward to.
Well, along Highway 12, you're going up at one point on the highway. It's at 9,000 feet. And from there, you can see off into all of Capitol Reef National Park. And you can see the Henry Mountains. You can see all along the Boulder Mountain there. And so I'll rate that as my best view to look for as you come down Highway 12.
All right. Fantastic. Always a pleasure, Mark. I don't know where we'll go next week, but we'll look forward to the adventure. And maybe Bob will come back if he survives his own guiding trip. But if you want to see some of the places that we talk about in our One Tank Trips of the Week, you can join Mark Wade and Bob Grove. It's roadtrippinwithbobandmark.com. And spelled R-O-A-D, road trippin, T-R-I-P-P-I-N with bobandmark.com. Guys, have a great week.
Good to talk with you both.